Yo, what's up? We're back, and this week it's going to be for UC Sao Paulo, and it's actually a decent card in my opinion, betting wise. And I actually think I have a pretty good read on this card, like I did last week. So hopefully we can do well a couple weeks in a row here and do well to end the year. But we're going to get right into it with the first fight of the night: Tracy Cortez taking on Vanessa Mello. And Tracy Cortez, she's making her UFC debut. She had a successful outing on the Dana White Contender Series. She beat a legit fighter in Maria Agapova, who's actually a beast. I mean, she came into Invicta after that and has done pretty well in Invicta. So she, has been getting finishes there. And I actually think Agapova, the girl that Cortez beat, maybe even has more potential than Cortez, is really good. But Cortez hasn't lost since her MMA debut, and she's young. She's just 6-1. This is the first time she's fought overseas, and it's going to be in hostile territory in Brazil. And she is the more athletic fighter. She's more technical with her striking, wrestling, clinch control. And she's going to have a big speed advantage on the feet. And she does use a lot of lateral movement. She'll blitz in with combos or takedown attempts. And she has a nice jab to the head, to the body, fast 1-2s, good left hook, straight right hand combination. And she's good at landing 1-2s, close the distance, and then moving in with hook combos. She moves her head pretty well as well, and she'll, duck under, come over the top with overhands, hooks, and it disguises her level changes pretty well, and her double legs are pretty decent. And she's even okay at striking moving backwards with jabs, straight punches. And she has good timing when she blitzes in with her left hook and front knee to the body, but she doesn't look very powerful. And fighters who get inside on her do tag her with combinations at times. And she does kind of throw naked kicks, leave her chin high. And she also doesn't bring her hands back to her chin after she throws punches sometimes. Can get countered pretty clean. She seems to get a little bit tired in fights, and I've seen her hit with some solid shots. And she seems to kind of shell up. She doesn't like being hit too much, but I would say she is pretty tough, but just maybe not like, I don't think she could take a huge amount of punishment. But I would say she doesn't have great power either. She has no standing KOs. She has never been finished by strikes though, and she's a strong wrestler. I mean, her grappling is what she uses to win her fights usually. Good double legs, body locks, and she's very good at getting deep on double legs, turning it into trips. And when her opponents try to defend, she's good at kind of chaining the takedowns together and going to whichever is available. And she's very active with the wrestling. She has good control against the cage as well. And I think in this fight she needs to have periods of clinch control, and she should be the stronger, more active fighter there and control that position, I think. But on top, she's pretty good, but not great. She does have pretty good top control, and in her last fight, she showed a good ability to get to the back and control there. And she did control large portions of every round that way, but she can get swept, and she is kind of too aggressive at times, sloppy. And she kind of off of her back can get, she can get stuck on positions on bottom, and she also can get caught in some submissions as well, like arm bars, even in top position. She did that against this girl, Blanchard, in Invicta. But her takedown defense is pretty good, and she has good get-ups as well. And she likes to, use switches, go for Kimuras. And, when she does get taken down, like I said, though, versus Blanchard, she was mounted. She got caught in a pretty deep arm triangle, but she showed good heart there. And Vanessa Mello, she's making a quick return. She had that fight with Irene Aldana where she kind of got beaten down. And her striking is just basic. She's flat-footed. She comes forward very hard. And I think this is good matchmaking. It's a good test for Cortez. Mello isn't very good, but she's durable and she's almost like a workout machine. I mean, if you have good cardio, you could fight smart for 3 rounds. You should be able to dominate Mello, but Mello's almost like a punching bag with arms and legs. I mean, she walks forward. She's flat-footed. She's very hittable. She's easy to take down, but she's just persistent. She'll take shots, keep coming forward, look for counters, and she kind of needs opponents to tire so they stand in the pocket with her and she can get her slow wide hooks off. And I'm gonna say Cortez, probably is gonna be able to avoid those shots. And I've seen her getting taken down. She really doesn't seem to have good takedown defense either. She won't really look for the takedowns or the clinch herself, Mello. And the only way Cortez loses this fight is if she gasses out behind the forward pressure. She starts to get tagged with those slow counters of Mello inside. And Mello hits hard, enough to hurt Cortez probably. And if she could start to accumulate a lot of you know, punches together, maybe she could start to wear on Cortez. And it also is in Brazil, where she might get a favorable decision if it's close. And I do think she obviously has a big experience advantage. But I just think Cortez will win a decision, look pretty good. I think she has a good mindset. I don't think she's going to crack. And I think it's a fairly, you know, close fight. But I'm going to go with Cortez. I wouldn't bet this fight, especially at the line. But I'm going to go with Tracy Cortez to get a unanimous decision victory here. Up next here, we have Arianne Lipsky taking on Veronica Macedo. And, you know, I haven't had much time to tape this fight, kind of because it was short notice. And, but, you know, I was actually going to pick Arianne Lipsky to beat Priscila Cachoeira, just because I think that someone that comes forward, brings the fight to Lipsky, kind of brings it out of her that she can start getting her combos going, get her leg kicks going, her straight punches, her counters, and she's, you know, pretty nasty inside as well. But with Macedo, man, I actually think Macedo is going to come in here and get a pretty easy victory on short notice, because Macedo can move, and we've seen that Lipsky, you know, stationary, needs you to stand in the pocket to strike with strike effectively, and Macedo can strike on the outside with kicks. She can, you know, she's much faster with her blitzes. I think she could blitz in, blitz out, hit Arianne, and, you know, avoid getting hit with the counters. And I think she's better on the ground as well. I think she could take her down and submit her. We saw Macedo get that submission in her last fight. And, you know, Macedo had a slow start to her UFC career, but she, you know, was fighting at 135. She was fighting some experienced people. She actually fought Ashley Evans-Smith with an injury. And I actually think that Macedo, you know, she has a good mindset. She has a good skill set. And I think she could beat, you know, a lot of girls in the division. I think she's pretty good, and I think she's going to keep improving. And I don't think Macedo is going to be someone that's going to beat her, even on a full camp. I think that she's not going to have enough. I think Macedo is too skillful. And I think Macedo is going to get this victory here. So I'm going with Veronica Macedo via decision. And in the next fight here, we have a battle of two Brazilians. And Renan Barão, you know, he's the former champion. He's taking on mini Vitor Douglas Andrade. You know, everyone knows how Douglas Andrade shows up in Brazil. But, you know, the fight is at 135 pounds once again, which I think is insane, man. As Barão, you know, he's missed weight two times in a row, three out of four times at that weight. He was already pulled from a title fight for weight cut issues to bantamweight. And that was almost 5 years ago, so it has to be harder now, and he's older. And he looked terrible on the scales in his fight versus Luke Sanders. He got knocked out in that fight. And for Douglas Andrade, he is getting his first start of 2019. He did get beaten down pretty bad by Petr Yan. It was actually a corner stoppage due to him taking so much damage. But Andrade fought in the United States, and he's 0-2 there. And in Brazil, though, he's 24-1. So he's going to be happy to be back in Brazil here. And, you know, he's let's just say Andrade is a little enhanced when the fight's in his home country. But, you know, he looked like a monster when he fought Chito Vera. And for Renan Barão, he's lost four consecutive fights, 6 of 7 overall. He's looking very washed up. He hasn't won a fight at bantamweight since 2014. And I would say he's extremely diminished, but still dangerous in round one. He starts fast, and in his last two fights, he has been dangerous with body kicks. He will, you know, hurt opponents to the body, and he did hurt Andre Yule to the body. He kind of lost his composure there and sprinted forward and got countered and dropped. He'll throw heavy low kicks as well, inside, outside, front kicks. And the kicks come fast and sharp early, but as the fight goes on, he'll start to throw them naked, slower, start to get countered. And he will close the distance with a straight right hand to the head and the body. He will look to counter with left hooks. His hand speed is diminished significantly, though. And, you know, he tries to stay out of the pocket nowadays. He really relies so heavily on speed in the pocket. You know, in the past, he would pull counter very well. He had power. And now his counters come slower. He's hittable. He doesn't move his head. And, you know, he can be very obvious with his strikes now. He relies extremely heavy on the rear leg round kicks to the body. And he did win round one of his fight with Luke Sanders. He controlled the distance with the kicks. He kept the volume high. But in round two, Sanders, you know, turned up. He forced Barão to fight moving backwards. Got in the pocket and knocked him out. And Barão's chin has always been a strong suit. It held up through the majority of his losses. But he suffered his second knockout loss of his career. Maybe his durability is going now as well. And he isn't the best wrestler, but he is good at body lock trips. He will use takedown shots to come up into body locks. And if he can get his hands connected, he is good at dumping opponents. And I would say that's the most dangerous part of his game right now. If he can get top position, he has a black belt, he has good control, and he is a submission threat, you know, but he hasn't shown a devastating top game in recent fights. You know, Andre Ewell, who's not good on the ground, he was able to scramble back to his feet versus Brow, and I actually do think Brow could have some success standing with Andrade early on. You know, he's going to have a reach advantage. Andrade is a guy who likes to feign his way into boxing range. So maybe early he could kick and move. I do believe, though, in order for Brow to win, he has to be able to clinch, get takedowns when Andrade closes the distance. And he needs periods of top control. You know, give him time to rest, slow down the fight, minimalize Andrade's forward pressure. And, you know, for Douglas Silva de Andrade, he's a powerhouse, man. He's always looking to control the center of the cage, work inside with feints, low kicks. And he'll throw big looping overhands from the outside that have big power, a lot of spinning attacks, spinning kicks, spinning back fists. And, you know, he will also mix in rear uppercut, straight punch combinations. And when he gets inside, man, he has devastating power. He'll go body head with those hooks, good hand speed, great cardio. He pushes a big pace. And he's going to have a massive speed advantage in this fight. And the way I see this fight going down is maybe for the first three and a half minutes, Brow's using his kicks, his counters effectively, he's winning the striking. But as the fight goes on, I see Andrade starting to cut off the cage, work the legs, go to the body, ultimately start going over the top to the head, and, you know, chop and zap Brow, then ultimately land that big hook combo or overhand that starts his head in. I think it's going to be round two or round three. And, you know, I don't think Andrade is a lock, but I would say he has a high likelihood of winning. And I would be pretty surprised if he lost here. And I'm going with Douglas Silva, de Andrade to get the victory. And up next here, we actually have a pretty good fight. Warley Alves, Randy Brown, battle with two welterweights here. Kind of guys that have a lot of talent, but they've been inconsistent in the UFC. And, you know, they both bounce back from losses with great performances in their last fights. Randy Brown, he cashes a huge underdog. He finished Brian Barberina. And Warley Alves, he beat down Sergio Moraes, knocked him out in the third round. And in my opinion, it looked like Warley Alves either came into that James Krause fight with an injury or was just really embarrassed by his performance. Because the first thing I noticed when watching his most recent fight with Sergio Moraes was he was in much better shape. You know, his stomach was tighter. He just seemed way more loose, ready to go, more fluid with his movement. And he was walking Moraes down. He was constantly staying in and out, feinting. And his jab was very effective. But he essentially won the fight due to low kicks. You know, demobilized Moraes early in the fight with those heavy calf kicks. He was throwing oblique kicks. And he has huge power in those leg kicks. He just needs a few to land clean in order to do damage. And once he got those low kicks established, he started throwing heavy round kicks to the body, going to the head with kicks, tight straight punching combinations. And he has a nice left hook straight right hand. He works 1-2s off the jab. He mixes in really nasty uppercuts. And, you know, uppercut against the cage in round three was what put Sergio Moraes out cold. And in the past, Alves would engage much more wild. You know, he would throw wide shots, he would brawl. And in this fight, he wasn't throwing a lot of combinations. He was moving more. And he wasn't standing right in front of Moraes as much. More composed. He maintained his energy better as well, for sure. And he was, you know, hurting Moraes early on in the fight. So it was smooth sailing for Alves. And I do feel if an opponent really pressures him, really tries to force him to engage in a brawl, he may revert back to his tendencies. And, you know, he's a hammer. When he can have his way, he pushes a sick pace. He doesn't slow down. He'll back fighters up. He'll get confident, mix in spinning kicks, jump knees, has that nasty guillotine. And he's a freight train, you know. And, you know, James Krause, he did something that was smart, which was he engaged in the clinch very early in the fight with Alves. He took away some of that speed and power. He was talking to him as well. He made him emotional. And Alves tired quickly in that match. He was loading everything. And he gets tired when he's forced to go backwards. And the fight gets tough. You know, he kind of checks out. His pace slows. He can lose focus mentally. He does have big power. He can turn opponent's lights out. Three knockouts. But his last two wins have come by KO, TKO. So that only three knockouts is a little bit deceiving. And he has a great chin. I mean, he can take a lot of punishment. He's only been finished one time in his career via standing KO. And, I mean, he had a brutal knee, barrage of follow-up shots. So I do think it was justified, but he wasn't knocked out or anything. And he doesn't really shoot takedowns, but, you know, his takedown defense is elite. You know, he's been taken down just two times in his entire UFC career. He was taken down one time in a three-round fight with Marty Usman. He was taken down one time versus Colby Covington. Ultimately, we know he won that fight with the guillotine. And they always have to be wary about that as opponents. When they shoot in on Alves, that guillotine, he could snatch it up. He has 3 in the UFC, 6 overall. And he can be controlled against the cage and lose rounds that way. And I think it's going to be a striking fight here. I could see Alves go for takedowns if he's getting outstruck badly. But I'm not sure he's going to be too effective getting takedowns. And for Randy, you know, Rude Boy Brown, you know, he put it all together in his last match. He defeated Barbarina. He was a big underdog and he got it done, which we predicted. But he is the underdog again entering this matchup with Worley. And this is the first time he's fighting out of the United States. And he's going to be trying to stay long range in this fight. Use that same game plan James Krause used. And I think it would be smart to clinch up with Alves early. Obviously be wary of that guillotine. But, you know, get that good head positioning, wear on him a little bit. He's going to have a 6-inch reach advantage. And he needs to pressure, stay in and out, feint, fake, work behind that jab, 1-2 straight punches, those front round kicks to the body. And, you know, he throws nice 1-2s, left hooks, double jab, left hooks. Really good hand speed, and I feel he's going to have a hand speed advantage in here. And when he gets his range at opponents on the back foot, he puts combinations together well. He has nice knees up the middle, and Alves has been susceptible to knees in the past. And you know, against Barbarina, Brown did let Bam Bam land a lot of low kicks, and you know, he really needs to pull the leg back or check the kicks versus Alves. But you know, I think I like that Brown did well versus Barbarina was when Barbarina pressured him to the fence, Brown clinched up, turned Barb, and controlled the engagements. And he has good head positioning. His long frame does make it easier for him to control fighters against the cage. He'll land big elbows, knees. And he's a good wrestler also. You know, he trades down there at Henzo Gracie's. So I feel he's underrated on the ground. In this fight, I just feel like Brown is more dangerous in the pocket, in the exchanges. I feel like he has tighter, sharper shots. And I feel like he could strike long range as well. And he has the reach advantage. And he has to be sharp, stay focused. He can't leave his hands down and, you know, get hit by a big combo or overhand or let Alves accumulate those leg kicks. And he can't get caught with that guillotine, but if he does it, I think he's going to win. I think Brown has the cardio to keep the pace. I think he could even get Alves tired by pushing him back. And he has to lead the dance with feints, walk Alves down, and make it clear if it goes to decision because it is in Brazil. And I like Randy Brown here, though. I think he's the better striker, better clinch grappler. I think he's going to be able to deny the takedowns if that's Alves' strategy. And I could see him landing a knee and hurting Worley also. And I'm going to say Brown wins via third-round TKO here. And the pick's going to be Randy Brown. And up next, we have one of my favorite fights on the card personally, just because Bobby Green's one of my favorite fighters to watch. But Francisco Trinaldo versus Bobby Green, 155. And it's two recognizable names. They're both right around the top 15 of the division, but maybe not quite that level. You know, both fighters had tests against up-and-coming fighters in their last fights in Alexander Hernandez and Jakar Close. And both these fights, I would say the fans thought that Bobby Green and Trinaldo won, but the judges disagreed. So, you know, the decision frustrated Green so much that he retired, but that was obviously short-lived. He's coming back here, and he's just won one of the last 5 fights. He needs a win badly here. And Trinaldo, you know, he's been trading wins and losses since 2017. He is 41, but he's still in excellent shape. He's a tough out, and he's never lost 2 fights in a row in his entire career. And I actually like this fight for Bobby Green, though, if he could stay focused and on for 3 rounds. Trinaldo comes, he does the same thing every fight. He likes to slowly come forward, throw some jabs, but really he's looking for the overhand left right hook combination and those knees, and he isn't as fast. He doesn't let go with his kicks like he used to in the past. He's more low volume, but obviously he's still dangerous. He's willing to throw down. Very dangerous knees to the body. Nasty in the clinch as well. And in the pocket and in the clinch is where he's going to have his chances to win here, in my opinion. Green has that hands low style. He uses a lot of head movement, shoulder rolling. You know, shoulder rolling to slip shots in return with counters. And that's where maybe Trinaldo could land a big combo or attack the body, have some success. He probably will be the physically stronger fighter, maybe better in the clinch, but Bobby Green actually has some nasty clinch elbows, good shots off the break himself, and Trinaldo may get takedowns, but I think he will struggle to hold Bobby down, And I see Bobby as the better scrambler and wrestler. Bobby Green did out-grapple Jakar close in his last fight. I think if Trinaldo grapples and Green could scramble back to his feet, he could tire Trinaldo also. But Green, he's much more high volume. He walks opponents down himself, and he has to walk down Trinaldo here, keep a high pace, stay defensively sound. I think Green, you know, he's way faster. He's better in the pocket. I see him being the better striker in this matchup just because I think he's going to make Trinaldo miss a lot, walk him down, make him come to him, pull counter, slip and rip. And I think he's going to be able to see Trinaldo's shots coming. And, you know, I think he's going to be the one throwing more offense as well as having the better cardio. I also think maybe Green could even get a takedown if he wanted to. He showed strong grappling against Jakar. But I don't think he's going to. You know, this is in Brazil, and Green has that tendency to fight close. So, you know, it's going to be interesting if he actually gets the decision here. But I'm going to go with Bobby Green via decision. I think he's going to be able to slip and rip, land more volume, put a pace on Trinaldo, put it on him with better boxing. And, you know, I wouldn't bet this fight, though, because I could see a scenario where Bobby Green wins and they rob him. So this would be a pass for me, but I'm going with Bobby Green to get a decision win. And up next year, we have another fun fight here with Ricardo Ramos taking on Luis Gorgori. And, you know, Ramos, he's making the move up to 145 pounds. He did have a 4-1 run at bantamweight in the UFC, but he said he really struggled making weight. And he's going to be facing Luis Gorgori, who's making his second UFC appearance. Gorgori, you know, he's looking to finish 2019 4-0, so he's been very active this year. And both these guys, they're solid strikers, good kicking technique, good diversity. And I think if it stays standing, it's going to be competitive because Ramos, he's the faster, more explosive guy, more one-punch power in my opinion, but he throws less volume. And on the feet, I feel Gorgori may, you know, pressure, throw more, make it close. And if you've watched Eduardo fight, though, you see he has a deficiency with takedown defense. You know, he's taken out pretty easily in a lot of fights. He wasn't able to get up after a couple minutes when he was taken down by Roberto Bandide. But, you know, if you're getting taken down by Roberto Bandide controlled, you're going to be in real trouble if jiu-jitsu ace like Ramos takes you down. You know, Ramos, he's very dynamic with submissions, scrambles from top or bottom. I also feel Ramos is going to have success controlling, attacking from inside the clinch, off the breaks. I think off the breaks is where he could set up that potential knockout shot. Obviously, it's very dangerous off that. You know, he had that spinning elbow knockout of Ayman Zahabi. And I think the Ramos, he's at a good gym. He's evolving. He's getting more experience now. And he should see that weakness of Gorgori on tape. You know, work a takedown, clinch-heavy game, get takedowns. And I feel like he's maybe going to get a finish or a decision if he can get takedowns. I actually see this as being a pretty easy fight for Ramos. And I'm going with Ricardo Ramos via third round submission here. And I actually think it's going to be a rear naked choke because I've seen Luis give his back quite a few times. I've seen him be close to getting in rear naked choke positions against guys that are not very good. And I actually think that, you know, Ramos is going to come in here and lay the first loss on Gorgori's record. So I'm going with Ricardo Ramos. Up next here, we have James Krause taking on Sergio Moraes. And, you know, James Krause, he had arguably the best performance of his career his last time out. He dominated. He knocked out Worley Alves. And if he can maintain that level of fighting, you know, he may be a threat to that top 15, top 25. And James Krause, you know, he's been a guy who's been a coach at Glory MMA and Fitness, trained there for a long time. But recently, he's made the effort to do his training camps at Factory X in Denver. And has paid huge dividends in the Alves fight, so I imagine he's going to be that much more improved for this matchup. And Sergio Moraes, he's lost his last two fights by brutal knockout. He lost one fight via decision that he lost by brutal knockout against Worley Alves. And that was the same fighter that Krause knocked out in his last fight. So this is kind of an odd matchup, but, you know, Sergio, he is a respectable 8-4-1 in the UFC. And he's going to be fighting at home. And he was undefeated in Brazil up until his last match. And if you look at his resume, you know, it's a bit strange because he holds impressive victories over guys like Neil Magny, Omari Akhmedov, Davi Ramos, Tim Means. But he also had a draw with Luan Chagas. He fought to a split decision against Zach Otto. He got dominated by Worley Alves, got dominated by Rocco Martin. And at 37 years old, we may have seen the best of Sergio in the octagon. And he isn't a technical guy with the stand-up at all. He was also, you know, knocked out cold just 6 months ago. So I don't know how recovered his chin is, but on the feed, he's athletic. He's fast with his blitzes. He'll throw a full clip. And his whole game is predicated on if opponents stand in front of him or wilt under his forward pressure as far as stand-up. You know, he'll throw these looping hooks that I feel catch fighters, when they think they're out of range, just because of how loopy, untechnical they are. And you have to respect the power, but it's proven in his last two matchups that if you move, use low kicks, jabs to offset his rhythm, he never really gets going. And he's gotten his lead leg battered badly in his last two matchups. He's also very hittable with the jabs, which I feel Kraus should be effective in using those. And Rice, in my opinion, in this fight, has to threaten with his wrestling. You know, he doesn't shoot takedowns from range very much. He won't shoot doubles against the cage, but he's good at using those loopy shots to get inside on the body locks, good at getting trip takedowns or taking the back, latching on guillotines. And, you know, he has a nice double leg against the cage, like I said, but he's also pulled guard in certain fights, but his game off his back isn't nearly as dangerous or controlling. Tim Means was able to stand up from his guard. He couldn't really control Tim Means when he pulled guard. And on top, though, you know, Maurice is a world champion BJJ guy. You know, he could take your neck or arm home with him. Really nice runic chokes, good arm triangles, guillotines. And I do feel his best path to victory is getting a submission, getting takedowns and controlling. And for Kraus, you know, he needs to use the game plan of kicking the leg, moving, using the jab. And once he has Maurice hurt, that's when he could pull counter, land the tight combos inside, try to take Serginho out. But he needs to avoid throwing those unset up kicks to the body, to the head, those front kicks he does. And I would only kick the legs, use the jab until he feels Sergio is diminished. And I feel like Kraus could win this fight almost exclusively with the jab if he wanted to. He has a black belt himself, but just avoid grappling, keep it standing, use that anti-clinch. And if he could do that, you know, avoid the wild striking of Sergio, he should dominate and finish Moraes. When Moraes starts to get desperate, that's where Kraus could start to use those knees, those uppercuts. And he just needs to avoid the takedowns in this fight. And, you know, if the fight stays standing, it's his. I feel as if Kraus, he looked amazing in his last match. And I'm buying that narrative of Factory X potentially making him dangerous. And I always thought Kraus, he was a very skilled guy, had an analytical mindset, but he just had some flat performances. And maybe that was due to not having the best coaching or training partners. And I feel like Kraus needs this win, has much more to gain. He's on an upward trajectory. Moraes is going down. And, you know, Kraus is a guy that has a lot of experience in the game, man. I mean, he's fought for a long time. He's fought a lot of guys. He's fought in WEC. He's fought in the UFC. And, you know, I think he's going to run his UFC win streak to 6, and I actually think he's going to get a third-round TKO here. So I'm going with James Kraus to get the victory. And up next here, we have a fight with Maluco Perez taking on Wellington Turman. And, you know, this is an interesting fight because, you know, Maluco, obviously, he's going to have the experience edge. He has more fights in the UFC. He's fought the higher-level opponents, you could say. Even though Wellington, he's fought some good guys, he obviously just fought Carl Roberson, which we just saw what Carl Roberson did this weekend. But, you know, Maluco, he's fought Ian Heinisch, he's fought Anthony Hernandez, Eric Anders, Andrew Sanchez. He's fought a lot of good guys, so definitely got to give him the edge in terms of that. But, you know, in this fight, I feel like on the feet, Maluco obviously is the more diverse striker. He's wild. He'll throw those spinning attacks, he'll throw rolling thunders, he'll throw head kicks, spin kicks, you know, and he is okay with his boxing, but if you could get inside on him, he does not have good hands. He doesn't have good defense. He will try to attack with nice elbows, but definitely is hittable there. He's a little bit kind of herky-jerky with his movement. He can kind of get off balance, put himself in bad positions. And we saw that with Eric Anders, right, where Eric Anders was able to, you know, stay kind of composed when Maluco was doing all that craziness, you know, playing with his hands, trying to get you to look here so he could do this, you know. He's kind of like a guy that tries to be tricky in there. And even on the ground, his submissions are tricky, low percentage. And, you know, he got the arm triangle off the bottom versus Heinisch, and kind of a tricky guy. But, you know, if you can get through all that flash like Anders, you know, where he's, you know, professional, hands up, walking him down, backing him up where he doesn't have a lot of room to explode, do those crazy attacks, then his deficiencies in his defense, in the boxing, kind of become apparent. And Maluko is a good wrestler. He's and he has good takedown defense as well. But, you know, like I said, he can get himself off balance with the striking more than anything. And I feel like Wellington Turman is a guy that's a Terminator, man. He's a guy that comes forward, hands high. He doesn't have the best striking, but he commits to his striking. Hard punches, good hooks, comes over the top well, has a nice head kick. And his ground game is nasty, man. I mean, when he takes guys down, he doesn't rest at all, man. He's looking for your back. He's looking to take you out. He'll grab the neck with no hooks in. And, you know, he almost submitted Carl Roberson multiple times. Nice arm triangle. Great control from the back. Great control in top position. And, you know, I just feel like Wellington Turman in this fight is going to be able to use his striking to back Maluko up. I think he's going to be the guy constantly pressuring going forward. And the thing is if Maluko is going to be able to win the scrambles or, you know, threaten with the submissions or be able to deny the takedowns, get Wellington tired, and then pick it up with the striking. But I just think that Wellington is going to be able to get those takedowns when he gets up against the cage. I think he's going to have an advantage when he gets in top position. And I feel like he's going to maybe eventually even be able to get the back, get that submission. You know, Marcos Perez does give his back to stand up. He was doing that against Eric Anders. And I feel like if you want to try to give your back to sit up against Eric Anders, maybe that's fine. But giving your back to stand up against a guy like Wellington Turman, I don't know about that. And I feel like Wellington Turman, you know, he's a young guy. He's going to be constantly improving. And he needs this win. You know, he hasn't won a UFC fight. He's 0-1. Maluko's kind of more established. And I feel like he's more of like a happy-go-lucky guy. Not that he doesn't want to win, but if he loses, he's not, you know, the most disappointed, as long as it was a fun matchup, a fun fight. And I feel like Wellington Turman's going to come in here and get a first or second round Rinnick choke victory. So I'm going with Wellington Turman to get it done here. And up next here, we have a really fun fight. I actually think both these guys could be players in this 185-pound division. I think that they could beat a lot of guys. But two Brazilians, they're both Dana White Contender Series fighters, and they're set to score off in Brazil. And, you know, Muniz, he's taking this fight on about a month's notice or a little bit short notice. And, you know, Royals had to deal with a lot of pullouts. I think he was supposed to fight, like, Trevin Giles, Alessio DiCirco, Kevin Holland. And, you know, he's getting a different kind of matchup here with the grappler. This is a striker versus grappler matchup. You know, Andre Muniz, he's an elite black belt. And Arroyo, he's more of a diverse karate striker with pretty good boxing as well. Elite kicking ability, though. But, you know, Andre Muniz's striking is simply to close the distance, get the fight to the mat. But he's very aggressive. He'll come forward with big, powerful looping hooks. He'll wane forward with no fear of getting taken down. He mixes in some nice body and head kicks, but not a lot of variety in his striking or not a lot of technicality either. He will brawl with straight punches, uppercuts, but he's very hittable in the pocket. And at range, I feel like he's definitely going to struggle with the striking of Arroyo. He's going to definitely want to cut the cage off, make it small, strike to get a hold of Arroyo, and then stay on him. And Munoz, he does fight at a sick pace. He doesn't stop coming forward. His takedowns really aren't very good. He uses a lot of jiu-jitsu takedowns, body locks, trips. But Munoz will pull opponents on top of him with the body locks and, you know, pull guard and then attack with sweeps and submissions. And he's extremely aggressive with his jiu-jitsu. He'll jump on guillotines. He'll snatch up triangles, arm bars, and man, I mean, his armbar is really good. I mean, he'll latch on that thing quickly. And when he fought Bruno Aziz, Aziz was able to control a bit in top position, but he was swept and beaten up also. You know, Muniz was able to use armbars to sweep. He had a nice footlock to his sweep. And he'll land nice shots from inside opponents' guards, but he doesn't have the best ground and pound. In his last fight, he did use an omoplata to reverse into a body lock. Circled to the back, took the back at the rear naked choke. Pretty impressive. And in top position, he's looking to get the back, get the rear naked choke most of the time. He will also look for arm triangles. And his style is almost borderline reckless. I mean, due to that, his fights do not really make it the distance most of the time. He's gotten a decision just 3 times in 22 fights. He is 3-0 in decisions, but 10 of his last 12 fights have been finished in the first round. And he's been knocked out in all 4 of his losses. 3 of those were in round 1. and he has finished 14 of his 18 wins within the first two rounds. But for Arroyo, he's more of a mover. He fights long, he's athletic, he's fast in and out, and he has a hands-down stance and great kicks, you know, nasty leg kicks, very fast front kicks to the body, round kicks to the body, good head kicks, spinning kicks, jump kicks. And you know, in this fight though, I don't know if he's going to be able to open up with those kicks like he usually does, because obviously he's going to have to worry about the takedowns of Muniz. So I feel like he's going to want to work the boxing a little bit more. And I wasn't as impressed with his hands. I mean, he does have some decent straight punches, some good hooks. And he said he's been working on his boxing going backwards, which is going to be very effective for him if he could do that in this fight. But he does tend to allow opponents to back him up towards the cage, clinch him up. And in a fight with Herdeem Albarek, who was also on the Dana White Contender Series, but he actually lost, he got caught in a rear naked choke. He didn't really look good on the ground off his back. And in this fight, you know, I feel like he should use low kicks, movement, pot shot. And when Muniz gets inside, you know, show his superior boxing, faster hand speed, back him up with punches and circle out. He can't get stagnant with his movement. He can't slow down over three rounds. And I feel like if he could keep it on the feet and continue to put punishment on Muniz, then maybe eventually his kicks will be there. He could find a nasty kick at a really nice highlight reel type finish. But he has three KO TKOs. He really isn't a huge power guy, especially with the hands. And he's only been a decision one time in his career. And he did slow down a little bit in that fight. But, you know, in this fight, I don't know if he's going to be able to KO Muniz with the hands. I think Muniz is going to walk him down and be wild if he can back him up. And, you know, the way that Arroyo holds his hands low, I feel he might be susceptible to some hooks, some overhands. And I feel like if Muniz could start to land those, that's what he could duck under for the double or their body lock. And when he gets it to the mat, I think it's going to be in his world. He has a big chance to get the submission. And I think that Arroyo actually has the higher ceiling. He's younger, but I feel like, or I don't know if he's younger in age, but he's younger in his career. He's only 9-2 versus 18-4. And I'm actually going to go with Muniz, though. I feel like he's going to be able to get it to the ground and get a second round rear naked choke here. But this is a close fight. This is a fun fight. And I think both these guys are skilled. But I'm going with Andre Muniz to get the submission. And up next here, we have an interesting fight. You know, Charles Dubronx Oliveira taking on Jared Flash Gordon. And, you know, Dubronx even came out here because this is a weird matchup for him. You know, obviously, he's been winning a lot of fights. He's been looking good. He's maybe arguably even beat guys that are higher level than Jared Gordon during his streak, you know, like David Taymor. But, you know, they're giving him here Jared Gordon. And he did express, you know, frustration on fighters not wanting to accept fights with him in Brazil, top 10 fighters. He said that he had a fight scheduled with the top 10 guy in Singapore, but then he didn't want to accept it in Brazil. I wasn't really sure why it didn't just go down in Singapore, but, you know, he is fighting here against Jared Gordon, so Jared Gordon is getting the opportunity to get a big-time victory here. But, you know, I don't really have a long breakdown for this fight, just because I think it's kind of self-explanatory. You know, we've seen Dubronx's fights, and I feel like Dubronx is improving a lot, man. I mean, with his striking is getting much better, much more comfortable. He's, you know, I feel like he's way more confident in it. He's, you know, more willing to get hit, and I feel like he's more willing to go forward and duel out damage. You know, his front kicks to the body, his you know, just his reach for that division is very helpful for him on the feet. And the fact that he's athletic, he can throw kicks without the repercussion of or fear of being taken down. And I just think he's way more dynamic than Gordon everywhere, man. And we saw how Jaron Gordon was on the mat against an elite jiu-jitsu guy like Carlos Diego Ferrer. He got dealt with pretty easily. And Jared Gordon, he's shown a susceptibility to body shots, which I feel like Oliveira is nasty with those body shots, man. I mean, those front kicks up the middle, those round kicks to the body. And he's going to be putting the pressure walking down Gordon. And it's hard to walk down a guy like Dubronx because he always could, you know, latch onto a, you know, flying submission, jump on a guillotine. So you want to be safe with that guy, but now he has the striking to back it up as well. And I just don't see a lot of paths to victory for Jared Gordon. It's in Brazil. He's coming out here, you know, obviously he's the underdog. He's a big underdog. And, you know, I just feel like Charles Dubrox has a way of getting these fights to the mat, man. I mean, I feel like he's going to maybe even hurt Jared Gordon to the body and then get it to the mat. But, man, I got Charles Dubrox here, and I got him to get another submission. I think that once it goes to the ground, there's going to be a big edge. I know Jared Gordon is a black belt under Renzo Gracie, but I just don't think he's ready for this level of a submission guy. I mean, we saw his teammate, his friend Paul Felder, who's a lot higher level than him, I would say, fight Charles Oliveira, who's also much bigger than Jared Gordon, and he was in a world of trouble with submissions. He did end up finding his way out, getting the win, so that was good on Paul Felder, but I think Charles has even evolved since then, and I think that if him and Paul fought again, that would be a fun fight, and I think that he's going to be able to take out Jared Gordon here. So I'm going with Charles Oliveira, Dubronx, to get that jiu-jitsu storm going early, get that first round submission. What a fight, right? This is the fight we've all been wanting for years. Paul fucking Craig versus Shogun Hua. I mean, we've been wanting this fight since the Pride days. Paul Craig's been putting it down. Nah, the fuck, man. I mean, Shogun, he's 4-1 in his last 5 fights. He hasn't fought in a while, but, man, I mean, it's tough for me to say he's going to lose to Paul Craig, man. I mean, Shogun, he's always had excellent takedown defense. You know, he's fought guys like Corey Anderson. Corey Anderson did get him down, but he was able to stand back up. Didn't get taken down at will in that fight and beat Corey Anderson. He's taken down guys like Dan Anderson 5 times in a fight. He's always just been notoriously hard to take down. When he is taken down, he has a very good guard. It's very hard to get much damage off on him. And Paul Craig, you know, he's always notoriously been a guy that gets wins and being more dangerous off his back than in top position. I mean, when do you see Paul Craig in top position getting submissions? We did see him get some takedowns against Ankalaev, which was impressive. He got some takedowns against Kennedy and Jekwu, but he always gets the submissions off of his back. He gets those triangles. That's kind of his specialty. He has those nice arm bars. In his last fight, he did get that knockout against Vinicius Moreira, but, you know, that's more fool's gold than anything, man, because Vinicius Moreira, we saw him get knocked out brutally two times in a row. His confidence had to be super low. And, you know, Paul Craig went in there and did what he had to do to him, and he knocked him out. I mean, he beat the shit out of him. He did a great job. So props to Paul Craig. But, man, I mean, in this fight, he has a guy, Shogun Hua, who's going to be walking him down. You know, Hua's a come-forward guy. He's not going to back up for Paul Craig. And I think that this fight is going to be Shogun's going to be chopping at the legs. I think he's going to start chopping the legs of Paul Craig. I think he's going to go to the body with the kicks, with some punches. And then I think once he starts chopping him down, beating him down with those low kicks, he's going to start to come over the top with his hooks, cut off the cage, start to put more damage on Paul Craig. And Shogun still has that killer instinct, man. I mean, when he gets you hurt, he puts you out. We saw that with Tyson Pedro. And, you know, I don't see a lot of paths to victory for Paul Craig because I don't think Shogun is going to get taken down. I don't think Shogun is going to go for takedowns and do something stupid where he lets Paul Craig lock in the triangle and submit him. And I think that his striking is on a different level than Paul Craig. Even now, I feel like that left hook in the pocket is going to give Paul Craig trouble. I think his punches are tighter. I think he has better defense. I think he throws, you know, a better collection of shots. I think he's going to be attacking low, attacking the body, going to the head, whereas I think Paul Craig is, you know, also in a spot he's never been before. He's in a co-main event. He's fighting in Brazil against a legend of the sport, and I don't think any of that intimidation shit is going to faze a guy like Shogun. I think Shogun is going to go in there, and hopefully, man, I mean, hopefully he goes in there and gets a knockout. Maybe in the first round, that's what I'm going to say, gets that first or second round knockout, and maybe he'll put the gloves down, man. That would be awesome to see. I don't know, but let's see. I'm going with Shogun Hua via first round KO here. Man, this is a great fight. The main event, Jan Blachowicz, he's taking on Renato Jacare Souza, and man, I mean, when you look at Jan, he definitely had the best win of his career in his last fight. He knocked out Luke Rockhold, the former middleweight champion, but you know, when I was watching that fight, I mean, Luke was winning that first round. He was controlling it until Jan hit that head kick right at the bell. Really nice shot there. But, you know, Luke didn't recover in that second round and got knocked out. Great win from Blachowicz. But, you know, Rockhold has no chin. Obviously, Souza has much better defense, in my opinion. Much better chin as well. And I think Souza is a much tougher matchup here for Jan Blachowicz because Hinaldo, he's a more, even though, I don't know, I mean, even though maybe it's not the way I'm, he's a guy that I think is going to be harder to deal with for these bigger guys because I think that he's going to be wanting more to get inside your chest, use that head movement, stay on you, rip the body, and he's going to push a pace on these guys. I mean, Jack Hermanson could push a killer fucking pace, man. And Jack Hermanson's a mover. He's a kicker. He's not like Jan Blachowicz. It's a much different matchup here. And Souza, I feel in this fight, you know, Blachowicz, he's more of a guy that likes to stay flat-footed a little bit and uses boxing, uses jab, which I do think that, you know, Souza has pretty good head movement. He showed that against Chris Weidman where he was using that head movement to slip the jab, but he was kind of using a little bit too much head movement where he was kind of letting Chris Weidman touch him with the jab, hit him with the straight right hand, exit, circle out, and kind of accumulate some points that were unnecessary. But I feel like Jacare in that fight was the one putting the damage on him, you know, attacking the body with those big shots, throwing that low kick, which I feel like that low kick is going to be effective in this fight. And I think that's what the game plan has to be for Jacare. He has to go forward, throw those low kicks, hit the body hard, and then start going to the head, going over the top. Because I feel like Janny's hard to take down, man. And if Jacare just goes in there right away and tries to go for takedowns, he could tire himself out. And that's where Blachowicz, when Jacare becoming a stationary target, he starts going backwards. That's where Jed could really get off with those body kicks. He could start getting off with those big shots, his punches, and try to knock out Jacare. The way I really kind of see this fight going, man, is I think that Jacare is going to go forward. I think he's going to use those low kicks. I think he's going to use that front teep to the body, those round kicks to the body, those body shots, those shots over the top. And I think Jed's going to be trying to use the jab, trying to keep him off. And but I think that as the fight goes on, that Jacare is going to start wearing on Blachowicz, and you're going to see it because I think that he's going to beat that body down of Jan. And I think that as the fight goes on, then he can start going for takedowns. And if he can get a takedown on Blachowicz, man, Blachowicz is a very good I respect his grappling skills, but he's going to get submitted. If Jacare gets on top of him with more than a couple minutes to work, I think this fight is as good as over. And I actually, you know, it is Jan, you know, he is going to be the natural light heavyweight. And if he could use that jab, use his straight punches, do damage on Jacare, hit with big power, use a little bit more movement, and could strike moving backwards. But, you know, we've never seen Jan have much success striking moving backwards. I mean, he has landed a couple big shots moving backwards. You know, he has some nice uppercuts. He could throw some straight punches. But I think if Jacare puts him on the back foot and really makes him work, I think he's going to get him tired. I mean, we've seen Jan get tired against Patrick Cummings. We've seen him get tired against Corey Anderson, Alexander Gustafsson. He got tired in that fight. And what was the theme in those fights? Where all those guys pressed forward and they attacked with the wrestling. And, you know, in recent fights, you know, the recent fights that he's had where he's fought, you know, Jared Cannonier, Nikita Krylov, Jimmy Manawa, Santos, Luke Rockhold. I mean, Luke Rockhold was pressing the wrestling, but, you know, obviously Luke Rockhold just didn't look very good in that fight. Nikita Krylov did get a couple takedowns on Blachowicz, but Blachowicz was able to submit him, reversed him, swept him, and, you know, showed a good game in that fight on the ground. But Nikita always has trouble on the ground with a lot of guys. Obviously, you know, Jacare would submit Nikita as well, most likely. And, you know, Jared Cannonier was coming forward, but he wasn't throwing the same volume that I think Jacare is going to throw. I think this fight is going to be kind of similar to the Jacare fight that he had with Chris Weidman, except I think it's going to be a little even more wider for Jacare. I think Jacare is really, I mean, I think he's going to open some eyes in terms of his performance here. I actually don't think that he's going to be able to compete with, you know, the upper echelon. Like, I don't know if he could beat a guy like Thiago Santos who could kick and move. I don't know. I definitely don't think he could beat a guy like John Jones, but a guy like Jan Blachowicz who's, you know, he doesn't kick moving backwards, really. He doesn't fight the best moving backwards. He's gassed out before. He struggled with wrestlers before. And I feel like his recent run of success has, you know, been, It's been really good. He's beaten a lot of guys. You know, Jimmy Manoa. He beat Luke Rockhold. He's beaten some guys. But, you know, those guys, Nikita Krylov, those guys have proven to not be... I mean, Jared Cannonier was a big win, but he obviously is an 85er. Devin Clark, he's okay. With Manoa, obviously, he lost a bunch in a row and retired. Luke Rockhold, he's, you know, kind of iffy on retirement right now. So he's kind of, you know, fought a lot of these guys, and maybe they're thinking he's going to be the middleweight killer. But, man, this is in Brazil. It's 5 rounds. And if he doesn't take Jacare out, man, is he going to... You think he's going to be the one fresh in the 5th round, or Jacare is going to be the fresher guy in the 5th round? Who do you trust in a dogfight? Do you trust Jacare Souza, or do you trust Jan Blachowicz? Because, man, I know who I'm going with, and I'm going with Ronaldo Jacare Souza all day. Take it to the bank. I'm going with my boy. Let's go, Jacare. He's going to get the win here, and I really feel like he's going to get the win, man. I think he's going to get a 4th round TKO or a 4th round submission, more likely a submission, actually, because I feel like Jan is very tough, but I could see him, you know, start getting hurt to the body as well. You know, I think those front kicks to the body and those body shots are going to be very effective for Jacare, and I'm going with Jacare Souza here. I think he's going to look good. I think he is going to look good at 205, so I'm going with Jacare Souza, 4th round submission. And for the most confident pick of the week, it's going to be Douglas Silva de Andrade, and he's actually going to be part of the parlay as well with Douglas Silva de Andrade and Ricardo Ramos. And for the upset of the week, I'm going to do Randy Brown as the upset of the week. I think he's a slight underdog now. I actually got him at like plus 135 or plus 145, I believe. I can't remember right now, but around that ballpark. I think now he's like almost a pick-em maybe, or minus 105, maybe like plus 100. But, you know, he's still a slight underdog. I do think, like I just said, I kind of gave a little bit of a passionate thing for Jacare. I think he's going to get the victory. So, hopefully, you know, he's another underdog that I feel like could cash. I think a lot of favorites are going to get the win here on this card. But, yeah, that's the breakdown for Sao Paulo. And, you know, make sure to comment, like, subscribe, put down who you got winning this, you know, this fight. Who you got winning the main event, who you're betting on, and, you know, what you think of my picks, all that. And, you know, if anything you want to talk about, obviously, you know, Nick Diaz kind of expressed he wanted to come back today. It was kind of a weird interview, so who knows. But, you know, a lot of things going on right now in the MMA world. And, yeah, so it was, hopefully you guys enjoyed the video. Thanks for watching, and I'll talk to you guys on the next card.